When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
ESNY. So are we excited for Knicks Cavs as well?
Looking forward to it for sure. I mean, yeah. We'll see how Randall is, but it should be a good series either way.
He's practicing. And Alec, are you prepared for the Rangers' eventual first-round elimination?
Oh, you don't put that evil on us, especially if it's against the Devils. You take that back.
Yeah. Oh, come on. You know what's going to happen. And they're going to, like, it's going to be 2012 all over again.
Stop it. Fucking Devils fans are going to come out of the woodwork, and I won't be able to take it.
What, all nine of them?
Yeah.
All right, how's it going, guys? It is Bleacher Creatures, episode 158, brought to you, as always, by XL Media, Crossing Broad, Elite Sports NY, Warwick Gaming, and, as always, Rivercrest NYC. We got Danny Small back on the show. What's going on, man?
Nothing much, guys. Thanks for having me on. Long awaited. I know Josh and I have had plenty of debates in the Slack chat and on Twitter about Yankees and Ohtani and basically everything in between.
All right. Well, as we're out now recording, right as the Yankees finish up a dominant 11-2 win over the Cleveland Guardians, star of the show today, apart from Gerrit Cole, was once again Franchy Cordero. And Chris Kirschner at The Athletic kind of saying the quiet part out loud. Like, if Franchy Cordero keeps hitting once Harrison Bader comes back, Brian Cashman has to make a decision about Aaron Hicks. Now, the smart thing to do would be, Danny's going to love this part, just lose Isaiah Kiner-Falefa. We know Brian Cashman. That's not going to happen. It's probably going to be Cordero or Willie Calhoun who gets sent down somewhere. I don't know. Like, if it's me, I cut Hicks and I eat the money. That's it. Just cut your losses and say it didn't work out. Let him go play somewhere else. But they're not going to do that. It's annoying.
Yeah, I mean, we've harped about this, you know, constantly. I personally believe that the situation will take care of itself because it seems like in these kinds of things, it always does. When one guy comes back, maybe another guy goes on the IL. And I think at this point, you know, Hicks had two hits. He looked like a halfway decent ball player tonight.
Actually got lift on the ball.
Yeah. Right. And he actually, you know, got a little something behind it. You know, we are always critical of Cashman not making what seems like the obvious move. I'm actually going to go against you, Josh, and I'm going to say that if everything is as it's been going for the last week and Franchy Cordero is still hitting when Bader comes back, I think IKF will be the odd man out.
Really?
Yeah.
Danny, what do you think here?
I mean, I have IKF, like, PTSD, so I don't think he's going anywhere. I mean, Josh knows I was, like, part of me was – worried that he was going to be starting at shortstop to start the year. But to me, yeah, it feels like IKF could definitely be that guy. I mean, he started to play center field and he actually looks decent out there. Like, he hasn't made any terrible plays, but he's not hitting, and, you know, he's a contact guy, which is what everyone says is, you know, his upside, contact speed, especially with the no shift, but it's not working out early on. Doesn't really look like he's going to be playing too much infield. I mean, he only got the start at third base because they're a little banged up in the infield.
And he looked awful at third base yesterday.
Yeah, right? I mean, I know a couple of those plays were tough plays, but you would expect, whether it's LeMahieu or Donaldson or Cabrera, you would expect any of those other guys to have given a better effort on those. So far, IKF's not making contact. He's not hitting with runners in scoring position. And really the only place you can play him and feel pretty comfortable is center field, which you have Judge. Bader's coming back. It doesn't really seem like there's a fit for IKF here. Which brings us back to why did they extend him the contract in the first place in the offseason? But that's, you know, that's more, I think, Cashman wasn't ready to give up on the trade yet.
I think you also have to figure that they knew the shift ban was coming this season along with the pitch clock. They said, let's see how he does with the new rules. He also added some muscle in the offseason to try and make more hard contact, but he's not making hard contact. Like, God, there was one at bat either yesterday or in the Baltimore series where there was a rally going on. He swings at the first pitch right into a double play.
I think that was yesterday because I messaged you about that.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
That was Cordero had to walk right before that, I believe. And then first pitch, ground ball, double play.
Yeah, and I think like that's the biggest frustration for, you know, for me is I'd understand or I'd have a little bit more patience if he was putting good swings on the ball and it just wasn't falling. But I mean, I feel like there's been too many times where I've messaged you, Josh, in our group chat and just been like, what the fuck was that from IKF? Like, what was the approach there? What was he thinking? You know, especially yesterday. So I think they're down by one, maybe two at that point. And it's just, you just saw Cordero work a walk and you swing first pitch and it's a tailor-made, I think 4-6-3 double play. Mm. Like, what was the game plan there? Because whatever it was just did not work. And I think there's one too many times where that happens with a guy like IKF. And it's also happened in the past with Hicks. That's where my biggest frustration with players like that come from. It's not so much as the production side because, hey, it's baseball. Sometimes you're not going to get the production that we all want. But, you know, if you're not making the right decisions, then that's the bigger concern.
And then just to build off of that, like, he's not a good base runner either. He's fast. He's athletic. You see it when he's in center field. He can move, he can track down balls, but he's not smart on the bases either, which if you're going to be a fringe guy who's going to be a utility guy with that speed, you know, he gets thrown out on the base paths the other day. You know, he just, like you said, he has, you know, his approach at the plate is just not great. Just seems like he's not, I mean, and this will sound funny coming from me, he's not a completely hopeless player. Because he does have some tools there. He does have some things that could work for a team. But it seems like at this point, there's no future for him in New York, especially with the emergence of a guy like Oswaldo Cabrera, who can play every position in the field at above average level. And then also is showing something at the plate. He switch hits. Just doesn't seem like there's really much of a spot on the team for IKF. And I get that, you know, Hicks is another guy who is on the chopping block, so to speak. But I think right now, you know, with kind of the roster crunch coming up, I think there's one guy who makes the most sense to move on from.
I mean, there's certainly time to think about. Like Alex said, this could take care of itself just with somebody getting hurt. Because I think the last update from Boone today, I think it was on Talking Yanks. Bader, he's pretty much ripping and gripping, ready to go at batting practice. He's going full force. I think now they're hoping to get him into some rehab games either next week or end of this week. So he's gearing toward a return at the end of the month, like barring a setback, like knock on my my desk's crappy wood. But yeah, like when the roster crunch comes up, it might be a case with Aaron Hicks where they either talk a buyout or they just send him home until they find somewhere for him to go. I don't know. There's probably some administrative legalese where they can probably do that. Cause like at this rate, he's just going to become another Joey Gallo. Only without the home run upside.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look, we've gotten off to the season at a 7-4 start, which I think if the Rays weren't 10-0 or.
Okay. Quick. Sorry to interrupt, Doug. Can we just all agree? Fuck the Rays.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, I just lost so much respect for Jeff Pass because he's like, no, I know that they're playing a really bad team. I know it's an easy start to the schedule, but the Rays are really, really good. Jeff, If anything, this is a testament to how good a manager Kevin Cash is. Mm-hmm. I even said this in ESNY's MLB preview. Like, take Kevin Cash out of the picture. These Rays are not a consistent playoff team. They're just not. He's going to be a Hall of Fame manager, probably win a World Series managing another team at some point in his career. But to say that, I don't know, to qualify that a team is good by saying, I know that they're playing some of the worst teams. That's okay. They played Oakland. They played Detroit. They're currently playing Boston. And prior to that, they were playing
the Nationals. The first series of the year, I think.
First or second. Regardless, you got the Nationals, the A's, and the Tigers. Those are three of the worst teams in the league, two of which are actively tanking.
Mm-hmm.
And the Red Sox are kind of in the same position, and they also just lost their best hitter, Adam Duvall, who, if we're being honest, great hot start, but he's overachieving.
Yeah. Yeah, those are all teams that have, like, very poor pitching, too.
And because the Rays have been in the World Series or been big contenders in the last 5 years, they get all the airtime, and it's, oh my God, I hate this. I was texting James Kelly about this earlier. It was either him or somebody else. And the general conversation was, so fuck the Rays, right? yeah, fuck the Rays.
You know, yeah. I will throw a bone their way, though. Going 11-0 is a very difficult thing to do, so they do deserve that credit. Because can we sit here and say seriously, if the Yankees had that schedule, would they be able to go 11-0? I don't think so. Which is going to lead to the point that we were working on before that little tangent. With the whole, like, Aaron Hicks and IKF and figuring out what to do with those kinds of players, there's still a number of holes on this team offensively in that lineup that need to be addressed sooner rather than later, because, you know, we can't hope to, you know, for Aaron Judge to have another 60 home run season. And while we do expect a bounce back from a guy like DJ LeMahieu, we need more depth. We need more ball players because, you know, in the moment we got a rookie who's figuring out offensively. I think he's had a lot better at bats over recent days, honestly, since that triple he hit. He's making better contact. He's driving the ball a little bit better. I think, you know, if he was in Yankee Stadium, he probably would have one or two home runs already.
That triple is a home run in the short porch of Yankee Stadium.
Yeah. And then I think he barreled something up against Bieber last night.
Yeah, it was a fly out to left field, but he made pretty good contact on it.
So, you know, while he's figuring it out, and we've all seen the numbers of guys who are at his age who struggle in that first month or two, like, you know, Julio Rodriguez and Adley Rutschman, the number one and number two rookie of the year in voting last year. But when you got guys like a Donaldson who struggled out of the gate before getting hurt, and you got guys like IKF, and you got guys like Hicks, that bottom half of the lineup, you know, prior to the revelation of Franchy Cordero, mm-hmm. was a bit of an issue. And so the Yankees need to continue to address that.
There are definitely some days there, I think, you know, yesterday in particular, where you look at the top of the lineup and you see LeMahieu, Judge, you know, Rizzo, Torres, Stanton, you see those guys up there. And obviously, you know, for the most part, what those guys are going to give you. But then that, you know, 5-9 or 6-9, there are some days where it looks a little wonky with Willie Calhoun. You know, I don't have too many bad things to say about Trevino, but he's not going to give you a ton of offense. He's obviously out there for his defense. So when Volpe obviously is starting slow too, it is that bottom half of the lineup is a little shaky. So obviously, definitely have room to improve there. But again, like we said about the Rays, like, there's a lot of time to catch them. They're not going to win 162 games. They're going to come back down to earth at some point.
Also on Volpe, this is Matt Musico sent me this earlier tonight. These are his monthly splits over his career. So 2021, this was his average in his OPS at low and high A. April and May hit .239 with a .796 OPS. June to September, he hit .309 with a 1.125 OPS. Last season, in April and May, this is across double and triple A, April and May hit 203. June to September hit 268 with an 853 OPS. So he could just be have Mark Teixeira disease and got off to a slow start. Also, quick update. Glaber tweaked his right hip flexor groin area. No test scheduled. Boone does not sound worried. Okay, great. Oh, come on. You're mad at Glaber again?
No, I'm just mad that this team can't fucking stay healthy. That we're 2 weeks into the season and all we're hearing is this guy tweaked this, this guy tweaked that. I mean, I thought we were
open. I'm sorry. Aren't you an ex-catcher who complains about his knees hurting?
No, actually, I don't. I never complain about my knees hurting because my knees don't hurt that bad.
Oh, well, excuse me.
I got to say,
my
I
back.
Do.
I'll go on about my back.
Yeah, back and neck. Oh, God. Driving a 2-year-old.
I was going to say, I still have hip flexor issues every once in a while from old high school injuries. That was like the one injury that I ever had playing sports growing up was like a sore hip flexor once in a while.
Don't lie. You got it playing pickleball.
No, swear to you, I definitely did not get it playing pickleball. I think it was a soccer injury that led into basketball season, if I remember correctly. But every once in a while, I'll be like running or playing basketball, take a step, and I'll just feel that little twinge.
Alec, what's your take on pickleball again? Like, you're from Florida? That's popular down there.
It wasn't that popular when I was living in Florida. It definitely has grown in popularity since I moved. I remember playing it a couple times in high school gym class, mm-hmm. and I had a blast.
That's exactly it. It is a high school gym game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
just a worse version of tennis.
But yeah. And tennis is boring as it is.
It's like that. It's like that awkward middle
child. For me, at least.
The awkward middle child between tennis and ping pong.
Yeah, right. It's like if you mix the two.
Alec, I bet your dad plays a ton of pickleball on the weekend.
No. He hasn't done anything since he was in beer league hockey 10 years ago.
Beer league hockey, and good lord. Okay, yeah. Like last thing I'll say this before we move on. I went to my parents are obsessed with tennis. And I go home fairly recently just to have dinner with my folks. My little brother's there, turns on the tennis channel. There's pickleball happening there. And there's tennis pros playing pickleball with just average Joes. It was an embarrassment. Absolute embarrassment.
Yeah, I could see that. It's definitely a game that's accessible to everyone. But yeah, if you're a tennis pro, you're probably going to be a little bit better than the average Joe.
Yeah, a little bit. Anyway, moving on from terrible lounge sports. Let's talk about this pitching staff. I know why he's still pitching. Is Domingo Germán ever going to go away? Like, dead serious. No, we are stuck in a terrible, toxic, abusive relationship with Domingo Germán. And yes, I'm seriously making that joke about him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's of course this year it's the early injuries have launched him into the rotation, which right. I like if he's your fifth starter for a little while, I don't think it's the worst thing in the world. You could be in worse positions, but he just seems like, at least for the Yankees at this point, his ceiling or base what you want him to do is just kind of being that long man out of the pen. If anything, because he's been given so many chances over the years, and he'll have a flash here and there, but I feel like most Yankee fans are pretty much over him.
Yeah, people don't realize just how much of a mirage 2019 was. I looked at the numbers about this last night. He had a 4.03 ERA with a 4.72 FIP, and yeah, he had 18 wins. I'm pretty sure that led either the American League or the majors. But hey, guess what? The Yankees averaged, I think, 4 or 5 runs a game when he was pitching. And he doesn't have enough velocity to be an overpowering strikeout pitcher. He does not have consistent enough breaking pitches to induce enough soft contact or otherwise keep the ball in the zone. Like, if his curveball is working, particularly on one night, he could rack up a bunch of strikeouts like he did against the Phillies. But I don't know, 5 walks last night, that's uncharacteristic for him, but it's also just a testament as to how far his fall from grace has been. And maybe he's a sixth starter. Maybe he can be a good sixth or seventh inning relief guy. But I don't know, like the fact that he's still in the Yankees, like I get that he's filling in until, like, I don't know, Rodon or Severino comes back, whoever comes first. It's just it's becoming more and more frustrating to watch him take the ball every fifth day, because you know that you just hope that you're going to score a bunch of runs in the hurry and he just kind of coasts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's like my biggest frustration with him. It's he doesn't seem like a particularly smart pitcher, if that makes sense, when the ability to make, you know, his own adjustments to get back on track, you know, when he was committing all those walks, there was all the, you know, non-competitive pitches that kept building up. And then, you know, he gets frustrated that he gets pulled in what, the fourth inning, fifth inning.
Yeah. He lasted like one or two batters into the fourth inning.
Yeah. And you know, he's getting frustrated. He's got the show of frustration. It's like, dude, like you just got to be better, you know? But then you look at the flip side, it's like, then you look at the first two starts that, you know, Johnny Brito had, and you see a completely, you know, opposite way of a young guy figuring it out. Like that second start for Brito against the Orioles, it was obvious that his changeup wasn't as effective as it had been in the first.
Yeah, so he switched to the curveball.
He switched to the curveball, and he started making the competitive pitches and kept relying on soft contact. So yeah. With Domingo Germán, you know, you want to see him make that – then take the next adjustment and the next step in becoming a more complete pitcher, where, as we've said thousands and thousands of times already, you know, what Mike Mussina would say, 10 starts, you have your stuff, 10 starts, you don't have your stuff. And the other 10, you got to figure it out as you go along. And right now, Germán just has not figured out that middle 10 starts of the season, which is when shit's not working, you got to figure it out and just get focus on one out at a time. We saw a little bit of that from Cole today in the beginning, and he figured it out to where he was cruising by the end of it. He's just not getting that from Germán, and I don't know if we ever will.
Now, to be fair, go ahead, Danny. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, do you guys think the pitch clock is hurting him in that, like, regard of, like, kind of, like, pitching through? I mean, I know you could look back to his previous seasons, and it, you know, it's kind of the same story. But do you think the pitch clock for maybe guys like that makes it a little tougher because, you know, you don't have that extra time to, you know, step off the mound, gather yourself, you know, maybe run through, cycle through some pit, you know, some options with Trevino. Like he doesn't have that time to think. And I guess you could look at it both ways. It would either be good for a pitcher because they don't have the time to think, they can just get on the mound and go. But it seems like it could also be a case of, you know, he doesn't have the time to, you know, really relax and, you know, think through exactly what he needs to do. Do you think, you know, pitch clock might have any effect on that, or am I overthinking that?
Certainly could.
Yeah, it certainly could. I think the problem that's created from there is a problem that probably existed with him pre-pitch clock, and that would be the inability to slow the game down naturally, right? Not letting the moment or the pitch get ahead of him and you know, controlling himself, controlling his emotions, keeping his emotions in check to just focus on the next pitch and executing it in the best way he can. So maybe the use of the pitch clock has now, you know, made it more, I guess, influential. I can't think of the word right now, but like has more of an impact on him on a pitch by pitch basis. But again, that kind of for me is like, well, that's where you want to see him make the next step. Is, you know, he's had a number of years now in the major leagues or in Major League Baseball as both an effective starter and a so-so starter. You would want him to figure out the best way of, hey, slow the game down, focus pitch to pitch. And if you haven't done it by this point, well, now you really have to because of the pitch clock. So I do think there might be something there, Danny. You know, it's just a question of, you know, how much of it is affecting him.
Yeah, I mean, and similarly, you got to wonder if that's affecting Clark Schmidt, just because now granted, his first start, he tired himself out in the second inning. His second start, the umpire took away the lower half of the strike zone from the very beginning, so he was naturally leaving balls up. But at the same time, lefties are batting 421 off of him compared to 182. Alec, do you think he's having the same problem with the pitch clock that he can't slow the game down when the game's coming a little too fast for him?
Yeah. You know, it does seem obvious with him. He tries to do too much, and that's when everything falls apart. So, you know, he's younger. His experience is a lot more limited than Herman's.
I mean, Clark Schmidt, I mean, I'll say this. He might wind up being a textbook example of how losing the 2020 minor league system really affected his development. Because prior to that, the Yankees were saying, oh, this guy is maybe like a number two and number three starter. I watch him pitch now, and I think, okay, he's maybe a seventh inning relief guy.
Yeah.
Because
I'm okay with not to cut you off. I'm just going to say I'm okay to be a little patient with him as a starter right now, just where they are with injuries. You know, Herman, we've seen years and years of him, so we kind of know what he is at this point. Schmidt, like you said, if he can start to get those lefties out a little bit, there might be a path to him being a back end starter in this group. Yeah. But also, like you said, we've seen him be somewhat effective in that, you know, seventh inning role, kind of that guy you can kind of put in, maybe get a couple innings out of him in the middle of the game. We've seen him have some success there. So I think I want to ride him out and see how he does in the rotation, but that's not a terrible backup plan if you have to revert to that, especially when you have a guy like Brito coming up and, you know, instant success in his first couple starts. That gives you a little leeway to kind of figure out what's going on with Schmidt.
Yeah, I mean, Brito really handled himself well against the Orioles last week. And just like I've said several times, the Orioles last year, while they weren't a playoff team, like I think this was at a game I went to with a friend. I said to him, like, pay attention. If they see a ball up in the strike zone, they're swinging at it, and they don't care like what the result is. They're just, that's their approach. So in the mean, they can hit, and they can hit hard. So for him to pretty much get out of that rough first inning, kind of reclaim control of the zone, and then, as Alex said, get that curveball working to go into get into the inducing soft contact. Obviously, they want to cap his innings a little bit since he's younger. Montas is probably going to be back at or about August 1st as well. But at the same time, like Clark Schmidt, like Brito, and this goes for Domingo Herman too, even though it's not going to happen on his end, Clark Schmidt needs to learn, okay, like this is the kind of pitcher I am. How do I adjust on the fly instead of just trying to be the dominant guy who gets out? It's like he's trying so hard to be an ace when he is a mid-rotation guy. He's maybe an ace on a small market team.
Yeah, it's just knowing your role and understanding, you know.
Yeah.
Perform to the best of your ability in that role.
One thing I do like about Clark Schmidt, and this has nothing to do with baseball, and I forget where I saw it, but some Garrett Cole called him a dog. They were like, oh, like because he's, you know, like a tough guy, you know, he's got that dog in him. He's like, no, he like actually barks like a dog. That's why he's a dog. I was like, oh, you know what? I was like, he's not pitching well, but I kind of like that, you know. Bark for Clark.
Garrett Cole is like, he's displayed a different side of himself this season. He's definitely loosened up a little bit more. Mm-hmm. Like we all kind of goof on Garrett Cole as having a bit of a Kermit the Frog voice, being kind of robotic, especially when it comes to talking about pitching. But then you go to the Baltimore series, there's a baby in one of the first few rows wearing Yankee stuff, and he's playing peekaboo from the dugout, and now he shoves against the Indians tonight.
I love that video of him doing his Nestor.
I was just about to say
that was great.
That was spot on and hilarious.
Yeah, he had it down pat. Everyone else had, you know, had a couple good efforts in there and whatnot, but Cole, you could tell Cole's been working on that one.
Yeah.
It just goes to show, like, even because in fairness to Domingo Herman, he was not the reason the Yankees lost last night. He was not. They were like, Ian Hamilton had some untimely walks in the later innings. There were wasted opportunities at the plate. This pitching staff is looking pretty good, and they still haven't seen Carlos Rodon or Luis Severino yet.
That's like actually part of my frustration with so far with their losses is every single loss they've had the ability to win.
Right. But at the same time, like 2 years ago, they'd go down, let's say 1-2 in the second inning. And it's like, oh, the game's over.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, there was the loss against the Giants where Stanton hits into the game ending double play.
Right.
And then there's like the loss against Baltimore and then whoever. And it's just like one or two runs or one hit here and the game is completely different. So, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, like credit does have to go to the pitching staff. Both, you know, the starting staff and the bullpen is they're keeping their offense in it for sure. They don't let it balloon and snowball into something that is they just can't handle.
Yeah, it hasn't been perfect from the pitching staff, but like you guys said, they're giving them a chance to win. And for me, the most frustrating losses aren't where they get, you know, overpowered and team scores 10 runs and runs them out of the ballpark. The most frustrating losses are like the ones to the Indians the Guardians on Monday, where, you know,
that's it. Danny's canceled.
Yeah, that's right. but you know, bonehead base running mistakes, you know, misplaying balls in the field, walking guys, like things like that. Those are the losses that really get to me. And you know, Josh knows, cause I'll shoot him a message on Slack or something. And basically just, you know, bad baseball that like Eliza, that's all I'll say, just cause you know, you're watching this guy's, you know, not thinking things through, missing, you know, easy double play balls, running themselves into outs on the bases. That to me are the ones where if you really want to be an elite team that can win a World Series, you got to clean that stuff up now.
Yeah. Well, you really
not now, but you know, regular season, you can't let things like that linger for, you know, months on end.
Danny, you and I are similar with that.
that shit
drives me insane.
I can live with a team hit, you know, 10 hits, you know, 8 extra base hits, 15. Like I could live with a loss like that. Cause it's like, you know what, that team, they came to play today. They had a beat on our guy. It is what it is. But when you just give games away, that makes me pull my hair out.
Yeah, I mean, like that one loss in Baltimore definitely had that kind of feel to it, because you later found out it's because Loaiza was hurt.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then Jimmy Cordero, who certainly not terrible, but like nobody was having a good game on the mound that day. But it's like I say in my analysis group chat all the time, and one of my high school coaches said this all the time. He's like, I don't care if we lose so long as we put up a fight.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's kind of like pro wrestling. It's like, yeah, the champion is the bad guy and he still wins, but every so often he still gets his ass kicked a little bit more, a little bit more, a little bit more each time. So that way when he finally does go down, it's like, it's this epic moment. And with the Yankees, it's still relatively early in the season, but now they're at a part of the schedule, especially in April, because they got the Twins next of all teams. So they should like be keeping a good pace in the AL East for the foreseeable future.
Yeah.
Stack up series wins after series wins. Even if you're not getting the sweeps, you're not undefeated like the Rays. If you win 2 out of 3, you're going to be in good shape come August and September.
Yeah, Michael Kay said on a broadcast recently, he's like, just winning these series, that's the key to winning lots of games.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, like, I actually wanted to ask you guys, because I kind of keep reminding myself that, you know, there's the expanded playoffs. It doesn't take as much to get in. Do you give the Yankees a little bit of grace, or is it still very much you got to win the division?
I think it's still very much you got to win the division, just because like the way the AL East is set up going into the season, it's the Yankees to lose. Like, we know the Blue Jays, not a great team. They can hit. That's about it. The Orioles, they got talent on both sides, but there's no leadership. And the Rays are the Rays, and the Red Sox are the Red Sox. But now, like, especially with the Astros off to a slowish start, again, it's still early, but the Yankees' goal from the get-go should always be win the division and hopefully get that bye.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, like, you don't want to have to worry about going on a Phillies-like run from the wild card just to win a World Series, you know?
I think I would give him a little more grace than I think Josh is here, just because they are in a tough division, at least so far it looks like, with the Rays, You know, the Blue Jays can play a little bit. The Orioles obviously are an improving team. And the Red Sox, you know, as much as we can, you know, clown on them for letting Bogarts go and some of the moves they've made, like they're not the Tigers. They're not the A's. You know, they're not the Nats. They're not one of these teams who's just completely throwing in the towel.
No, like if they steal their win from the Yankees, it's going to be because they caught us on a bad day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree with that. And like you said, though, the Phillies, like they showed it's possible to make that run all the way through. Obviously, you're putting yourself behind the eight ball a little bit with whatchamacallit, with, you know, having to burn your starters those first few games.
Yeah.
But I think if they're healthy and the rotation is healthy going into that, I think they can overcome that. Because you have Cole, obviously, early on. I would assume you'd have Rodon would be your number two, then Nestor and Seve. If that's your four, I would feel pretty good about Nestor or Seve starting against another team's ace in the ALDS. Obviously, it wouldn't be ideal, but, you know, that's one way to kind of almost flip things in your favor. If you can steal that first win against them, then you have Cole coming back around. You take a disadvantage and turn it into an advantage like the Phillies did last year. But again, you know, in a perfect world, you win the division, you get that bye, and you rest your guys. But I could definitely see the Yankees getting hot at the right time, which, you know, has always been their problem in recent years. They make the postseason and then, you know, they just clam up against the Astros or, you know, the Rays or whoever it may be.
Well, I think,
sorry to jump in there, Josh, but it actually does make you wonder if Cashman went out to get Rodon with that in mind.
He absolutely did. Here, I'm going to pull up the numbers. Go ahead.
Well, because, like, you know, I think we all can agree when healthy, Severino can be considered an ace in this league, regardless of what team he's on. When he's healthy and he's going, he has ace stuff. So, as you said there, Danny, you know, you play kind of the games there with the wild card, and hey, you throw Severino or Rodon, and then you go with Cole. You know, that is a weapon that the Yankees have. So I think, you know, I know I posed the question, do you give them a little bit more grace or do you still shoot for the division? I think I side with Danny on this, where, you know, I can give them a little bit more grace period, or, you know, forgiveness if they don't win the division, because, you know, maybe it's because I have been living in Philly for the last number of years and watching that run that the Phillies made last season be so extraordinary that, hey, yeah, all you need is just get in. And at that point, you know, it's anyone's ballgame. So, and the way the pitching staff is set up, you know, I think handling a three-game wild card is a lot more manageable.
Just to answer a question about how good Carlos Rodon is against the Astros. He has made 7 starts in his career against the Astros. He is 2-0 with a 1.55 ERA. And at Minute Maid Park, he has made 3 starts there and posted a 1.86 ERA. So Brian Cashman absolutely had the Astros in mind when he picked him up.
Yeah. I mean, you need someone to get Alvarez out, even though he seems unfazed, whether it's mm-hmm. a righty or lefty. So,
yeah, he's unfairly good, that guy.
Yeah.
There was something else that we were just talking about that I want to touch on. Oh, yeah. Also with the playoffs, though, you have to figure the new rules are also going to favor not just the Yankees, but hitters across the board, because now with no shifting, the Yankees can steal those hits up the middle through the holes in the infield. There isn't someone playing right behind second base automatically waiting to field that ground ball or play short center field like it would in softball. So I don't know, maybe that helps them get out of their heads like they were in the ALCS. Instead of just trying to mash the ball left and right all the time, they actually try to do what they did against Cleveland today: draw the walk, get the single, get the double, have someone clear the bases with the home run, then start the process all over again. Just keep that line moving.
Yeah. I mean, they have those pieces in place with DJ, and, you know, Glaber is out there to personally prove me wrong. So I will gladly say, Glaber, keep doing it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, hopefully Volpe figures it out and, you know, he'll be another piece that will have that, you know, high contact ability. And yeah, then you got the, then you got Rizzo, you got Stanton, you got Judge. They're going to do their thing. They're the big boppers. So it is nice.
Maybe to find... Donaldson comes back on a hot streak.
Yeah, we'll see.
Not holding my breath.
No, me neither.
I thought those mechanical changes were going to be like, we're going to work for him, but then the season starts and he looks the same. So, yeah, who knows at this point?
Got it. So he went home for Easter because I follow his fiance on Instagram. He was wearing, here, hold on, I'm going to pull this up. He's got this absolutely disgusting dad sweater on. It's like, I don't know. It's kind of like the dude from Big Lebowski meets Bill Cosby. It's really bad. Here, I'm gonna. Here, hold on. I'm gonna show it. No, that is not what I wanted to push. Stop. Okay. Yeah, there it is. Look at that.
Oh yeah.
That is a tragic sweater.
It's something you can only wear on a holiday, I think.
Yeah. Sorry, Brianna. Oh, okay. He's got like those maroon shoes too.
Is he wearing socks? I can't see.
I hope he is for his sake.
Yeah. That's a big sorry. Deal apparently. With sorry, those, Brianna, those kind of
if you listen to this, no, I think they're like fancy sneakers.
Okay, gotcha.
Those dress sneakers that Gratch was talking about the other day.
Yeah, yeah. We just had a big shoe conversation recently.
Well, yeah, Alec, what's your weigh in on the dress shoe debate? Where are you on, team loafers or team lace dress shoes?
I'm more of a lace kind of dude.
Really? Okay.
Yeah,
they hurt my feet.
Lace and socks. I can't wear dress shoes without socks. Gotta have some kind of dress socks on.
Yeah, like I prefer loafers just because, like, I don't know, I feel the traditional laces and dress shoes, it's just kind of bulky for me. this is actually a funny story. We're going to pivot away from baseball. We're divvying more into like the Rich Eisen territory of this podcast, just going off on random tangents. Like, years ago, I'm in a wedding with a couple who we're no longer friendly with because this whole wedding was the worst. I kind of like very nicely kind of give Bambi eyes to the bride, like, hey, traditional dress shoes hurt my feet. I've got loafers that are the same color. Is it okay if I wear those? She goes, that's totally fine. Just wear the dress shoes for like the formal pictures and that'll be fine. Great. 2 days before the wedding, I sprained my ankle just like taking a bad step somewhere. So I had to wear like the loafers just by default. She was so mad. like how dare I sprain my ankle 2 days before the wedding?
How dare you go loafers instead of laced shoes?
I know, right?
You weren't load managing before the wedding to get ready, make sure you're healthy.
Never. We do not load manage in this house. It's like oh god, I can't believe I defended Kawhi for all those years. Like for so long, I would say I would take Kawhi over Steph Curry just in terms of building a team around. And yeah, that take has not aged well.
It wasn't the craziest take in the world, but yeah, I think it hasn't aged quite well. But hard to see that in the moment.
Really? Oh, Christ, more Rays highlights.
No, we don't need any Rays highlights.
No, I hate this team so much.
It's just that week where, you know, Brandon Lau is, you know, hitting like he's Babe Ruth, and then he'll go back to being a 230 hitter. And
Yandy Diaz hits over 100 exit velocity for once.
Wander Franco will injure his thigh or his hand or whatever.
Yeah. Let's talk about the bullpen. Clay Holmes actually looks in not just top form, but better than last year with the way that demon sinker is moving.
Yeah, I don't know how anyone can stand in against that. No way.
Yeah, like I was explaining, because we had people over the weekend, and one of them's a Mets fan. We were talking about just like the grips and the mechanics and like the physics of Kodai Senga's ghost fork.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was saying how with Clay Holmes, like this is a guy who throws a pitch that's 98 miles an hour. It ducks down like a sinker, but it comes at you at 98 miles per hour, moving like a slider. And then on top of that, he also throws a slider.
Yeah.
He's got so much run on that sinker that it's just, I mean, I don't know how anybody can figure it out with, or how, I don't know how anyone can hit that without just spiking it into the ground, like, you know, right to the shortstop.
Or right back to him.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, he's already said how he pretty much got tired last year, and this year he's way more prepared for the physical demands of a closer for the full season. But I don't know. I mean, if Clay let's just establish this. He's going to blow saves at some point, right? It's going to happen. Like, we say this about closers all the time. These are guys who usually throw 1 to 2 pitches, and on any given night, only one of them's working. And it's no different this year. Even though closing is shifting more towards soft contact and less towards strikeouts, this is still going to be a problem, because if you're giving up that hard contact instead of that soft contact, that's not good. So I feel with Holmes, as long as Yankee fans prepare themselves for the fact that he is going to hit a bit of a slump, probably not nearly as bad as Aroldis Chapman did, but he's still going to have some bad games. He might be in line for another All-Star season. It's a little early still, but early signs are looking good, I'd say.
And I feel like the closer,
it's
like a curse for the Yankees closer that Mariano was so good, because you know, generations of Yankee fans are just always going to be, you know, always going to be spoiled by that, which, you know, I would defend Chapman a lot, you know, when he was not last year, when he was, you know, kind of cooked, but, you know, back in the years where he was, you know, a top closer, you know, people would rip him every time he blows a save. And it's like, you know, guys, like, this is normal for baseball. Like, closers don't close every game. They don't get every save. Like, they make mistakes. They're, you know, that's why they're in the bullpen. You know, they're not a perfect pitcher. Like, Mariano Rivera will never see anything like it again.
No. Craig Kimbrel gave us hope for a little bit.
Yeah. Well, he can't do his thing anymore, really. He doesn't have enough time.
No. Although he seemed to be doing okay with the Phillies when he closed out that game against us.
True.
Yeah, but I don't think he's, like, really done much since then. Speaking of the Phillies, they're losing right now.
Oh, yeah. Notoriously banged up Phillies. Who's even playing first base right now?
Boehm.
Rice.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, they're losing the Marlins 8-3. Luis Arraez is a double away from the cycle when he already has 4 hits.
I sat him on my bench in fantasy tonight.
He's starting for me every single day.
I've got some decent batting average guys, so, like, I haven't been putting him in as much because I need more RBIs, home runs, but might have to start slotting him in there every day.
I took the gamble.
Like, I did. I went with Cabrera in my utility spot instead of Arraez, which Cabrera, you know, he had RBI runs, not bad, but.
Mountcastle has 2 home runs and 9 RBIs today.
Not to break up the fantasy baseball party, but I just saw that everyone in the Yankee lineup had a hit today.
Ooh, look at that.
Yeah, I think 3 or 4 guys had 2 hits too.
Rizzo, DJ. Yeah, no, everybody was mashing today.
It was great. You love to see it. And then tomorrow you go for the rubber game with Clark Schmidt on the mound, and Cleveland's probably doing a bullpen game too.
Looks like some rookie who's maybe making his debut and then
because Savale just went down.
Yep. Hopefully get 2 out of 3 there. Then you got 4 against Minnesota.
Then
my boy comes to New York.
You gonna go to any of those games?
I was thinking about it, but not sure if I'm gonna be able to make it out there. One of my buddies, it's like his birthday that week, so he was thinking about maybe going to one of them, but we'll see.
Yeah, Thursday is weird, like, because that's on the 20th. They're doing a 4 o'clock game for some reason. Yeah. Oh, Danny, speaking of 4:20, you've got a funny Knicks story about this. Where weren't you on Zoom for the press conference and someone, like, shouted out something about weed on April 20th?
I think that was from the COVID year.
Yeah.
And I'm almost, yeah, that sounds very familiar. I forget who it was. Maybe No, not Dennis Smith Jr. I don't even think he was on the team anymore.
The way you made it sounded like quickly.
It might have been quickly. Because that was when we were doing all Zoom. So, yeah. You know, I'm at home like this, you know, just listening. And yeah. Whoever, like, in the background, you just, you know, maybe it was like Obi Toppin sitting in front of the camera or something. And you just heard somebody in the background, which, that was the weird Zoom year. But, yeah, I've got some stories about the Knicks locker room.
Yeah, pretty much the way that story's capped, apparently quickly just shouted at the top of his lungs, "Where the weed at?"
Yeah. It was something along those lines. And it was like, you know, you could see everyone's face on Zoom. Everyone just starts laughing. And yeah. I mean, I couldn't see the PR guy like off to the side, but I'm sure he gave a disapproving look. Not that the NBA cares about weed anymore at all.
Yeah, like, baseball too. Like, yeah,
nobody tests for it anymore.
I had a Knicks Zoom presser at or about that date when Taj Gibson was sitting down. I forget whether he was talking to Burks or Derrick Rose, but he just sat down. He's like, "Hey guys," and then all of a sudden he's just looking up, and then he just gives this demonic look on his face, and then just goes, "Sixth man of the year," and then just goes back to stone face. He's like, "Hey, all right, yeah, all right, ask your questions. What's going on?"
That sounds about right.
Yeah. All right. But you know what? To close out the show, Danny, put you on the spot. Knicks, Cavs, who have you got and why?
Oh, I'm still working through it, but put me on the spot. I'm going to say Knicks in seven.
All right. Okay.
I think Mitchell's the best player in the series. And then Jared Allen and Mobley are really good players too.
Yeah.
But I think Brunson is a top-notch player who can go toe-to-toe with Mitchell.
Yeah.
And then obviously Mitchell Robinson's not going to be a slouch inside. If Julius Randle can come back and be a little bit healthy, that obviously, you know, would be a huge, huge boost for the Knicks. Yeah. And then I just think stars win in the playoffs, but the Knicks have such a deep bench that it gives Tibbs so many options in these crunch time situations where he can go with Grimes because Grimes is knocking down his threes, or he can go with Hart because Hart can lock up Mitchell.
Grimes is red hot too right now.
Yeah, that Grimes is getting hot. Obviously, quickly, you know, is ascending right now. Yeah. Obi Toppin, I don't know how much burn he's going to get if Randall's healthy, but he's looked pretty strong down the stretch. I still trust RJ too. So I think just having that depth will, in a long series like that, will play out for the Knicks. And I wouldn't be surprised to see a guy like Grimes or Hart, you know, have a big game in a meaningful moment to kind of give the Knicks a little bit of an edge there. So maybe it's a little bit of a homer pick, even though, like, I'm not really, you know, a diehard Knicks fan or anything like that, but I think Knicks in seven, I'll stick with my Knicks in seven pick right now.
I was going to say Knicks in six, just because I think that as good as the Cavs are, and even if Randall either doesn't play or isn't at his best, I'm pretty sure Tom Thibodeau was an assistant on that Jeff Van Gundy team that knocked the Heat out of the playoffs when the Knicks were the eight seed just from playing smaller. And I figure with two big bodies like Jared Allen, like Evan Mobley up in the middle, even though Mobley plays a little more off of the perimeter outside the key, I think that if you get those smaller bodies like the Quickleys, like the Harts, like the Grimes, stretch the floor a little bit while also playing top-notch wing defense, you could give the Cavs a run for their money. Like, even if they play the better game on paper, like, you can sort of out-hustle them.
I mean, I think most of these games are going to be close. And, you know, this Knicks team, more so than, you know, than past years, even 2 years ago where, you know, the Knicks were rolling, Randall was a star. This year, you feel way more comfortable with them during crunch time, just for the simple fact that Jalen Brunson is one of the most clutch players in the league. He can get to his spots. He can distribute for teammates. They do have a couple shooters out there that, you know, he can dish out to. I think just that will put him over the top. And that's not to say that Donovan Mitchell can't be that same guy and, you know, kind of put the Cavs on his back. But I think it's a really, really close series. And I think the Knicks take it. I'm going to say seven still. But like you said, I wouldn't be surprised if they close it out at home at MSG.
Yeah, I mean, I think that also, and we'll put a pin in this with this final point. I think that also what you have to say about Brunson is that the Knicks against the Hawks 2 years ago, the hype of the moment clearly caught up with them. They weren't ready for it. Maybe they were a little tired. But more importantly, they had Elfrid Payton playing point guard, and then you had Derrick Rose's wobbly legs coming out. I think that in Brunson, he's not just a clutch player. He's kind of got that calming, soothing presence. He's a leader. And like Mark Cuban can say what he wants about, oh, like once Rick got involved, everything went south. No. Like, just like Gerrit Cole was always going to the Yankees, Jalen Brunson was always going to the Knicks. So, and I think that because he knows what his job is, he knows that he's there to lead, and that he's managed to coexist with Randall, with Barrett, and Hart being there just to give, just to help spell Grimes has done wonders for that rotation. I think that, yeah, like six or seven games, just because Donovan Mitchell is really, really good. So is Darius Garland. But I don't know. I feel
mention him earlier.
Yeah, but I feel that like the Knicks can out hustle Cleveland, and it'll tire them out, and they'll get eliminated in the second round. But just to have that for the fan base, it's going to be great. Not just for the Knicks, but for the town, for the city.
Agreed. And I don't think Brooklyn's going to be doing much for the city, because I think that series is going to be over quick. But then again, I don't think really too many people care if the Nets get bounced. Maybe a few people here in Jersey do, but that's about it.
It's just the Nets.
Yeah. Second class citizens, little brother.
All right, Alec, you want to do some Rangers talk real fast, just sort of like give your plea ahead of the playoffs?
Yeah. What I think the Rangers can win in six.
Against the Devils?
Against the Devils. I think they can. Now, my biggest concern starts with Jack Hughes.
Yeah.
Jack Hughes is like, he's venturing on the territory of game changer, like a game breaker. But my bigger concern is the coaching staffs and the systems in place for both teams going forward in a seven-game series. The Rangers know the Devils have a lot of speed. That's their MO. They're going to just go full throttle attack. And the Rangers are going to have to find a way to take that space away from them. Now, the Rangers are bigger. The Rangers are more experienced. And I personally do. And the Rangers have by far the edge in goaltending. So it might.
Plus Jacob Trouba is going to send at least one guy to the hospital.
Yes. You know, you hope that it gets that's how the Rangers are going to neutralize the speed the Devils have. They're going to have to play physical. They're going to have to get in the face of their stars. They're, you know, guys like Jesper Bratt and you know, Jack Hughes. You know, I know the Devils addressed it with getting Timo Meier, but that, you know, he doesn't scare me as much as the other guys. But also, you know, the Rangers are, I think, deeper because, you know, you got a first line of Mika Zibanejad, Chris Kreider, and Patrick Kane.
Yeah.
And you got a second line of Trocheck and Panarin and Tarasenko. And then you have the kid line. And then you have arguably what might be the best fourth line in hockey. Like, the Rangers have four lines that are going to bang bodies, get pucks deep, and put them in the net. So
now, more importantly, is the beard going to go untouched from now until the end of the playoffs?
No, I got to do something about this.
Come on.
This is getting out of control, dude. I look at it every day.
Come on. It's not like full Tormund Giantsbane.
Well, you want me not to touch it to the end of the playoffs, it will be full Tormund Giantsbane.
Maybe just like a trim before the playoffs.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Neck a little
go
bit
from there.
Maybe get a little scissors. Just, you know.
Buy yourself a time just in case they go for the cup.
Yeah. I mean, look, they made it to the Stanley or to the Eastern Conference Finals last year. It was evident that they got very tired, and it allowed Tampa Bay's experience to really take over after game two.
Yeah.
But, you know, the Rangers are going in as the more experienced team than the Devils. And if you've kind of been following up on some of the articles coming out surrounding the team, especially from Vince Mercogliano of LoHUD, they're hungry. They've had their eyes set on the playoffs for the last 2 weeks, and they're pretty much just only getting their cardio in during games since then. And they're still blowing teams out of the water. And then if they're not, they're getting a point in overtime in shootouts. So, you know, the kids are hungry. You know, Hedl, Lafreniere, and Kako are going to be monsters again. And I think that a guy to watch for the Rangers is going to be Tarasenko. Dude's
won a cup. You were really excited about that trade.
Yeah, the dude has won a cup with the Blues. He is a historically big time. Like, the thing with Tarasenko and Kane, they have done it before, and they're always big time players. So, yeah. And like, this version of Kane doesn't need to be Showtime that he was in Chicago. He just needs to be, you know, 70% of that, yeah. And everything else is going to fall into place with Tarasenko being, you know, it's just that Tarasenko plays such a playoff style game, which uses his frame. He's strong as hell. He has an absolute lethal shot, and then he has a little bit of playmaking abilities. So if he wants to get physical, he's going to get physical. You got Chris Kreider, who's been there, done that. The dude, and you know, the dude's a gamer. So is Mika Zibanejad, and Artemi Panarin can break a game open at any moment. So, you know, I want to say the Rangers in six. And, you know, it's up to, personally, in my opinion, Gerard Gallant and the coaching staff to make sure that they give their team, you know, every opportunity to succeed.
I'm going to say Devils in seven, just because every time I talk shit about the Rangers, they do well. So
fair enough.
Yeah. Well, I was just going to add in there too. It's like, basically the Rangers have seven home games in the series because, you know, no offense to Devils fans. Like, they're a good fan base, but they're tiny, and you got to imagine offense. Rangers. You got to imagine the Rangers are going to have a ton of blue in that, in the rock. So
I hope so.
That's been the glory, you know, because right now the Devils and the Hurricanes are battling out for the Metropolitan lead, because the Devils are like a point behind the Hurricanes and the Rangers are a point behind the Devils. So the Rangers are pretty much ensconced at the third spot in the Metro. So it's just a matter of who are they going to play, New Jersey or Carolina. It's going to look like it's going to be New Jersey, but either way, regarding, we saw it last year when they played Carolina in the second round. It doesn't matter. They Ranger fans took over.
That's true. I remember that. Yeah.
So, you know, yeah, that is the beautiful thing about it. It's like, you know, home ice advantage doesn't really matter for the Rangers, because either scenario, they're going to be playing in front of a big Ranger crowd.
Yeah. Rangers fans travel really well.
Really
well. Especially the last few years.
We can't fucking afford the MSG ticket.
We cannot. I had to pay like $106. I had to pay my friend $106 just to go to go to Knicks Rockets the other day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hotel room, flight, like all that stuff is cheaper than just going MSG.
Yep.
Okay, we're gonna do a whole other episode about how MSG needs to be cheaper.
Yeah. Although it is the best arena in New York. So
yeah.
I wish it was a little cheaper, but
let's be careful what we say. I don't want to be blacklisted.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I haven't been to
this, James Nolan.
I haven't been to the one out in Elmont yet, UBS.
I have not either. That's on my list. I gotta check that off soon.
Yeah, Barclays is just terrible on so many levels. All right. And my cat is now on the printer telling me it's time to feed her. All right. All right. So thanks for listening, folks. We will be back next week, and hopefully the Yankees do not break our hearts so much then. Same with the Knicks and the Rangers. Danny, thanks for coming on the show, man.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
All right. And we will see you guys soon.